I joined the club. I did it. I now no longer have a minivan.
It's like we're talking about like echelons of clubs here.
I know. Dude, I mean, it feels good.
A lot of people are just trying to get into the minivan club, and it's a noble. It's a noble collection of great men.
Mm-hmm.
The minivan club.
Correct. But sometimes you get called to the big leagues.
But the minivan is really, it's really a subculture of a bigger picture, if I may.
Please.
And then there's the full-size van.
And that's where I am
now. You're living a full-size life, Adam.
In a full-size van.
Welcome. Welcome to it.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's funny that we both ended up getting almost the exact same van.
I know.
Almost at the exact same time.
I know. There's so many things in our lives that we do almost
like
in parallel.
Like kindergarten, for instance.
I know, we were in kindergarten.
We're both doing kindergarten at the same time. That was crazy.
That was crazy. So some good news. Let's do some good news.
Big fan of good news.
So just an update on Baby Mary really fast.
Yeah.
We had some fantastic news this week. It was so great to have. So her surgery that she had where the esophagus is connected to her stomach, there's no more leaks.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Which is a huge win. So we have no leaks going on, which means, what that means is like we can now get a feeding tube in so she can start having breast milk.
Right.
Which is like...
Instead of just IV nutrition.
Yeah, nutrition, right. Yeah. And so now she like will be able to grow more because she's having more natural milk.
Uh-huh.
So that's fantastic news. And then we also got a news that from a brain scan that there's no additional hemorrhaging in the brain right now, which is fantastic news because, you know, brain is very delicate at that age. The blood vessels in the brain are very, very fragile.
Important.
And very, very important.
Yeah.
And any kind of pressure can easily rupture those blood vessels in the brain. And, you know, we're pumping her full of oxygen with pressure. So it's kind of one of those things like, hey, we have to do this because she has to breathe. That's one of the things about a human is you have to be able to breathe. One of the side effects could potentially be, you know, if we have too much pressure in a very underdeveloped brain, there could be blood vessels broken.
Yeah.
But we found out that's not the case. So two really great wins this week for Baby Mary. There's been several guys who have emailed me, reached out to me, texted me, called me. You know, just voicing their support and love and incredibly grateful for that. So it was just really nice to get some W's.
It does. It seems like she's doing so good.
Right now.
At the moment.
I know.
It feels like she's in such...
She's in a good spot right now.
Right. Things are just going... They're going right. Thank you to everybody who has been praying for her. I know that, you know, that has... We'll never know. Until we die, the difference that really made. But I just know it's too much of a coincidence when, you know, it's like, all right, it's getting really bad. Everybody pray right now. And then like, boom, just gets better. And, you know, that happened over and over again.
Yeah. Also, I have to give like a big shout out to my goddaughter, Mary, who sent us a just beautiful letter. That was just like almost tear jerking, right? did you read it?
I did.
It was just like out of the innocent mouth of babes, uh-huh. right? You know, it was just basically she was like, you know, I was just in the van and I was thinking I could just had, you know, this incredible peace that came over me that made me think, you know, it's going to be okay.
Uh-huh.
And if we can't trust in our Lord, then, you know.
Yeah, everything's going to be fine. And even if it's not, then it's still the good Lord's will, or, you know, something.
Yeah, something just like beautiful. And it's just like, oh my goodness, Mary, I love you so much. Get over here so I can hug you. You know, like, it was just beautiful. So anyway, that was really great news. I was really, really pumped about that.
I have been in other news.
Yes.
I've been doing a great service to humanity this last week.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I've been cutting down Bradford pear trees.
Oh, good. Yes. That is a good...
Which is a noble service.
Yes. I do not like Bradford pears.
They're the worst. You know, like you judge something by its fruits, and like, I think the analogy here is multi-layered in judgment of the 80s. and 90s, okay, when all of these trees were planted. You know, some salesman came through and just absolutely, man, he made a killing in this part of the country selling all these junk trees that look pretty, you know, in the spring. They smell like fish. They break. I mean, a wind gust comes along and they're just limbs down everywhere. They're just terrible junk trees. And when you let them grow wild, they grow massive thorns. So, like, when you see
the wood's not even good firewood, really.
No, it isn't.
Which is, like, even more frustrating. It's like, I had to cut you down, and now I have to burn you for, like, half a second.
Right, yeah. It burns very poorly. It is wood. It does burn, but it leaves a bunch of ash, you know.
It's not a very good burn.
Yeah. And no fruit. It's a pear tree. And this is what I'm saying. Here's the multi-layer of the analogy here. You judge it by its fruits, not there. This is a pear tree.
How many of them do you have at your place?
10. No. There's a row of 10 that I'm cutting down.
Okay.
That line my driveway. I have kind of a long driveway.
Oh, in the front?
Yeah, in the front.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess so it is kind of picturesque to have this like row of trees. But I'm cutting them all down and I'm moving all of my fruit trees to the front.
Nice. So that way it's...
And I'm also going to be able to really get a lot more. So
nice. It'll be good. Yeah, I'm anxious to see how our fruit trees do this spring. There's like a lot of things you have to do, like, you know, cut them at the top, you know, cut them and all this stuff.
Yeah, especially when they're young. You do have to learn to prune a fruit tree.
Right.
You have to pick your precious is what they say. You know, when you've got two branches.
Right.
You really want to try to limit the branches in the beginning. And you create like almost terraces. Like here's like a group of branches down here, and then you want to let it get taller with an open space. Because you need air. You need wind. Air movement through the tree to help pollinate. Mm-hmm. It's a big, big thing. But anyway, cutting down Bradford pears. Cutting down trees is just a lot of work.
It is. But it's satisfying work. It's good work.
Running a chainsaw is fun.
Yes.
So
splitting wood. Mm-hmm. Talked about that many times. There's very few problems in this world that can't be solved by picking up an axe and splitting wood.
Yeah. Or at least that you won't feel better about. Problems, you'll feel, might not solve any of the problems, but you will be at more peace with them.
Oh! Every time, every couple seconds, yeah. The only other thing that I have on the farm, so to speak, is, dude, our chickens are coming in production really well now that daylight savings. Also, like, can we just stick to this time period? Like, and not go.
I'm going to be honest, I have no idea when we're in daylight savings time and when we aren't. Like,
I think we're daylight savings now.
Which one is the real time?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, we'll be talking about time today.
I'm like way lost in the Chronos over here. You know, when is the real one? When are we in the
I like this
adjusted
one. Whatever one this one is,
yeah,
I like this
because you get
one.
More daylight in the evening.
Right. So I have time to...
I would be totally fine with just sticking with this.
That's what I just said.
Like you're saying.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
You know, and this concept of time, which is what we'll kind of be talking about today a little bit. It's so interesting that today, in today's world, we're so focused on, we have so many things that are telling us what time it is. And, you know, just 100 years ago, it was, I wake up when the sun gets up, I go to bed when the sun goes down. And that was the two time periods, really, that you based your day off of. Mm-hmm. And now there's so many more noises within the day to tell you about time.
Yeah. Or I think people were just better at keeping track of time themselves.
What do you mean?
Like, you know, you just kind of know. You would get good at knowing what time it was without having to depend on a clock all the time. Even though 100 years ago, people had watches. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they didn't have alarm clocks.
Right.
And this is a skill that I think younger generations, and I think that includes us in this case, have lost, that older generations, they would just wake up when they needed to wake up. Mm-hmm. You know, you just go to bed, say, I got to get up at 6. And at 6 o'clock on the dot, you just...
Your body would go,
you just
yep.
Wake. And that happens to me sometimes where I know I got to get up and I'll wake up 2 minutes before my alarm goes off, you know?
Inevitably,
It happens to people, but...
I get so mad about that.
Yeah.
It's not like the 2 minutes is going to make a difference.
No, it feels like it does.
I know.
I want those 2 minutes.
And then I lay, and then my alarm goes off and goes, no, I'm going to stay in bed for 2 more minutes because I woke up too early.
I was in spite.
Yes.
These are my...
And then I fall back asleep. And
these are my minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just weird how different we order our day today versus, you know, 150 years ago mm-hmm. without people having, you know, wristwatch or pocket watches, which is something that would be sweet to bring back.
The pocket watch bring back. Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought you meant the wristwatch. And well, I was like, bro, I think it's back.
I think it's a staple.
I didn't know it needed to come back, but I think it is back.
I've refused to get a smartwatch. Just in principle.
Yeah.
Because I just don't need another thing like distracting me.
I'll tell you what. I have, and maybe we can flesh this out a little bit on the other side of the break. I have a really hard time settling myself with the concept of an expensive watch.
Okay.
I have philosophical qualms against it.
Okay.
And I don't have these qualms like in judgment of people who have them. I just can't. I can't get it myself. I can't wrap my head around it.
What if somebody gave it to you?
I'd be fine with that. But we'll talk about it a little bit more on the other side of the break. A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. For the break, we were talking about watches, okay? I struggle to wrap my head and understand expensive watches. Okay. Because I feel like there's a lot of vanity in it. I'm just, and once again, I don't pass judgment on other people who have expensive watches.
You're judging.
I really don't. I don't.
I feel like you're judging.
I don't at all, but. It's a watch. It's purpose. It has a purpose. It has a telos. Okay, the end of the watch is to tell time. And you can go get a quartz wristwatch that is going to tell you it's going to keep time incredibly well. Okay, so if the purpose of a watch is to tell time, and you can get one for $12. That's going to do that really well. And I get it. Maybe that $12 watch doesn't... And there is like an aesthetic to a watch, okay?
Yes.
So, but for $25, or let's say $50, okay? Let's like really step it up.
Or about $100.
Okay, fine. $100.
What about $101?
No. We're going to say $100. We could just get... We're
that
speaking,
is too much.
Speaking hypothetically here, $100 before tax. You can get a watch that's fairly indistinguishable... in looks
mm-hmm.
from the $4,000, $20,000, you know, like from some of these other watches, okay?
Okay.
Because these days, like handcrafted watches is a totally a thing, right? There's like investment yeah. watches that, you right. know, you buy and they appreciate in value. You know, it's a market. So these are watches you've never heard of. Nobody like...
Dude, I have three.
People have not heard of like these, you know, boutique watches or like, you know, whatever it is. But this $100 watch, when someone sees it, they go, oh, that's a nice watch. You know, just by looking at it, they won't be able to tell. So
don't have Kondratovich's?
No, I don't.
Well,
so I would like to know purpose.
I hear your principle.
What is the other point of the watch that would justify potentially a large expense?
Okay, so my question, I understand your principle. My question is, does it hold with other things? Meaning, you can make the same argument for clothes or shoes
yeah.
or anything else, do you feel the same way about those?
I would say generally I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I do have expensive, some of the things that you named. But in those cases, it's because I at least believe that they are, in fact, higher quality or going to last longer. Like I have some expensive shoes that I wear every day to work, dress shoes, but I've had them for 10 years now. You know, I probably paid double or triple what I could have,
mm-hmm.
but they've already lasted three times as long as what these other shoes probably would have. So hopefully, you know, but with a watch, that quartz watch,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you smash it, it might break easier. You know, it's probably made of like got cheaper plastic, that kind
of stuff.
But the difference when you go from like 100 into the thousands of dollars, I don't know what the justification is on this is a watch. It's meant to do a purpose. Those purposes are more than strictly functional. I get it. But it seems disproportional in cost to what it's.
Some people get watches for monumental like things that happen in their life as a like, hey, we closed a big sale.
Yeah.
Because of that, I'm getting this watch as a like token of the hard work that I did. You know, so that's the thing about you, Dave, is that you have these thoughts in your head. You're very black and white a lot of times when it mm-hmm. comes to things that you like or dislike.
Yeah.
And when you dislike something or you don't understand it, it's just like, nope, I just cannot see how anybody likes this. And it's like, well, what about you over here? And it's like, no, not that over there. That's a different thing.
You know, I think it's fair if you got to apply the rules. Got to apply them evenly.
Because we had a talk after the episode last time about podcasts, YouTube videos, and things like that.
Was that about this? That was about something else, wasn't it?
That's what I just said.
Okay. Anyway, it's just too much money for a watch.
Okay.
It tells time.
There you go.
Tells time, and it looks
Dave
nice.
Dave will judge you if you have a nice watch.
It just seems like vanity to me.
Okay, so we're going to talk about time today. It is definitely time to move on from this topic.
I agree.
So I was reading this a short story by my the first time I've read a short story by Ernest Hemingway. Read an Ernest Hemingway short story.
He's kind of brutal.
So there's this, the writing style, I think is called like iceberg theory or something like that, where he...
I read a Hemingway novel recently.
Oh, really?
The Sun Also Rises.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of tough. I mean, it was a tough read. It's about this group of people who they're all pursuing things... worldly things, and they're all miserably unhappy and just chasing pleasure in life. And in the end, none of them find it. So like no redemption in the end.
Zero redemption.
Yeah. It's sort of like, it was almost dystopian
mm-hmm.
in, the pursuit of things, you know, it didn't mm-hmm. take place mm-hmm. in a dystopian reality, but anyway, not really my favorite. I don't actually recommend it.
So the one I read was called Indian Camp. It's a short story.
Okay.
And it's basically a son and father, they're going into an Indian camp because there's a Indian woman there who's giving birth, who's really been struggling giving birth. The dad is a doctor. And he goes in there and there's angst, and you know, so she's been in labor for 2 days. There's like this, you could just feel the suffering that's been happening in this, you know, for these 2 days that this woman's been going through. That the husband's kind of in the corner by himself, and he's just kind of almost, he also like broke his leg or like hurt his leg, and so like he's in a lot of pain as well, but he's just like kind of mentally going crazy because his wife has just been struggling for 2 days, screaming and yelling and all this stuff. Anyway, so dad comes in and he does a cesarean section to get the baby out. Baby comes out, new life. The dad's over there, but quiet. They could turn around and he had before, as they were trying to get the baby out, he kills himself. and the kid is there as well. And so like this, it's this incredible tension of...
Why did he do that?
Just out of mental anxiety. Just out of like, just he couldn't handle it anymore. He didn't know what the dad was doing, cutting her open, and just couldn't handle it. So there's this crazy tension on that this son is witnessing, like, of suffering, of new life, of death, all boom, 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 like all right there. And then they're coming back from the Indian camp. They're you know, in a boat going back, and the boy is trying to process it all and basically says, like, I'm never going to die. And it's like his way of just trying to cope with this mechanism, or it's a coping mechanism to try to cope with what just actually happened,
yeah.
of him trying to process all these things. And it's crazy this time period, because there's suffering, there's new life, there's death, all right there. And in a very short period, and him trying to process it all.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and not just death, but senseless death. Death,
right? Like unexplained. Like because he even asks, like, do men do this?
Yeah.
He asked his dad, and he said, like, well, most men don't, but some men do. And like you can just tell he's just trying to process this. And as he's going back, you know, he's thinking about the past of the suffering, and then the new life, and the senseless death. And like kind of just a whole circle of life, and like, you know, he just comes to the conclusion, this boy, that I'm just never going to die. And it's just his coping mechanism. I'm kind of reading into it. That's how I read it. It's like, is his coping mechanism,
yeah,
of being able to formulate all these things. And so that was kind of like the beginning thought process of how I, you know, of today's discussion on time is that how time is just such a gift from our Lord, and like every minute is a gift. And you know, Saint Augustine talks about how time, he's like, I understand time until somebody asks me about it, and then it's hard for me to articulate. And it is what Saint Augustine says. And you know, time is, you know, there's the past, there's the present, there's the future. He breaks that down, Augustine does, and to talk about how the concept of time, and you know, comes to the conclusion that the soul has past and future, but the body only has now.
And, right. Yeah.
And you know, we talked at the end of the last episode how in the Purgatorio, you know, Cato's like, "What are you guys doing here? Run!
Yeah.
Like, stop wasting time! Like, what are you doing? Like, get going!" And so it just kind of like all those things that are happening right now, and then obviously happening some things that are happening in my own personal life, it made me kind of just stop and think about the precious gift of time,
mm-hmm.
and how we have, you know, even in Psalms 95, where they talk about it, David talks about, if today you hear his voice, harden not your heart. It's like, listen, if you hear his voice today, act
now.
Not tomorrow.
Right.
And how often we put things in the future, like, oh, I'll take care of that the next day.
Yeah. There's always, there'll be time. There will be time. There will be time.
So, anyway, we'll keep talking about this. Talking about time today on the Catholic Man Show. Last segment, we were interrupted by one of my children having night terrors, which is an incredible phenomenon of being in time without understanding reality.
Indeed.
Not really sure how all that works from a psychological level, I guess.
It's a weird thing.
But we're talking about time. Okay, so one thing I wanted to bring up is, this is something I was thinking about this last week. You know, Dave, you and I, growing up, we lived in the same neighborhood, and we had this retention pond, which is basically, you know, it was just for flooding, but then they ended up you know, adding a little basketball court. And right behind there was this green belt. And back there in the green belt, you know, there was this that creek that runs through.
Oh, yeah.
And when we were young, we'd go back there and we'd play and
explore.
And like, I remember thinking, like, looking at all this stuff and just be like, man, this is a gigantic cliff and this massive body of water that's moving through, and we have to build a bridge to be able to get over it. How are we going to be able to do, you know, like all these things that we did as a kid, right? Yeah. And like going back there and just thinking about like, man, what a fascinating piece of land that we're like exploring. And then not too long ago, maybe a few years back, 5 or 6 years ago, I was driving by our old house and I was like, I'm just going to go back, you know, just kind of go back there and see. And just how little everything was, how finite, just how like this massive cliff that I imagined when I was a kid was really just like this little bitty hill.
Uh-huh.
And this body of water that was rushing through and we had to build a bridge over. I was looking at it and it was like, this is just a little bitty like stream I could hop over.
Uh-huh.
In our minds, we were like, we had envisioned this grandiose atmosphere that we were around, that we had to explore and conquer, and it had an impression on us, right? It had this like, it helped with wonder, it helped with creativity, it helped with, you know, just play. It had a big moment for us. It was big at the time.
Very.
And then I went back and just how insignificant.
Disillusioning it is.
It was. And then I started thinking about like, there's so many times in our life how things can seem so grandiose and so big and so monumental from a good or a bad standpoint, like either way, either extreme. But it's just this very short blip of your life. And while it had a significance to your life, it was just this like little bitty time period.
Mm-hmm.
And these little time periods that play a big role in your life have meaning, but in the grand scheme of things in your life, it's just such a small portion of your life. And so I started thinking about, okay, well, what does that mean, you know, from just your like everyday life, these things that you feel like are just big, and these jobs that you have to close, the getting your kids to, you know, whatever soccer practice or whatever, you know, all these things that are just like, rush, go, I gotta get, this is a big deal. This weekend is a big, like we have a big weekend this weekend. It's like, yeah, it's a gift. And a lot of times we rush through it to try to conquer it.
Totally.
I was listening to Trent Horn's podcast a while back ago, and you know, his wife has recently been ill. Had brain surgery, had brain cancer, and somebody asked him, you know, what's the difference between pre-Laura, which is his, you know, his wife before she got sick or before you guys realized that she had, you know, a brain tumor or something like that, versus post? Like, what's the biggest significance? And one of his answers was like, we used to rush to everything. Hurry, get in the car. Hurry, we gotta go. Oh, I hope I can get this to this light. We gotta be here on time. He said, now we don't rush.
Well, that sounds great. That's beautiful.
When we can get there, when we get to Mass, we get to Mass. When we get to the next meeting or the next thing that we have to do, we get there.
Uh-huh.
But we don't rush.
Yeah, you know, the older I'm getting, the more valuable I view time to be. Part of it is because I'm so busy all the time. I just have a lot of demands on my time, right? And so I feel like I have less of it. So I value it more.
And we're on the other side of the bell curve.
That's true also, that, you know, you come to this realization about like you don't have, when you're young, you really do feel like you have an infinite amount of time.
Right.
That there will be time to do anything. And everything.
You're the little boy on the boat thinking, I'm just never going to die.
The time though that I really feel scarcely about is not actually like, oh, I'll be dead soon. But that I, this is like one of my fears as a dad, that I am going to have this moment where I wake up and realize, like, I never played ball with my son because I was too busy doing important things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got these animals. We've got a lot of, you know, which, it's a busy lifestyle with when you homestead. There's a lot mm-hmm. of things that, like, oh, these are important. They're not meaningless chores, okay? But that I'm going to let that get in the way of, you know, taking, like, I have this fear of never teaching my son to fish. And at the same time, I'm like not making plans to teach him how to fish. And I ought to, you know, so like maybe I should be talking to myself right now. Like,
have Luke teach him.
Put it on the calendar. But I want to teach him, you know?
I'm just joking.
And, but just that I will misuse my time for the and miss the most important things. You know, this is essential vocation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so the older I get, the more I start to really value, because sometimes it's like, man, on Saturday, like I have 3 hours this whole week. What am I going to do with these 3 hours? And I've got a huge list of projects. I'm trying to finish tiling a shower. It's over 2 years now I've been tiling this shower. It's ridiculous. Okay. And, you know, so it's just like this, all of these pressures on my time, that just want my time. And I just have to, what are you going to do? And so at the same time, I think about on Sunday, like having leisure. And I think there's just a lot of rich things to, when you think about the preciousness of time,
mm-hmm.
and it's insane value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ultra, like some super wealthy people, this is the, you know, they talked about this sometime where, like, as rich as they were, they couldn't buy more time.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized that their money was like, in the end, they were no richer than anybody else.
Right.
Cause
it's like, you think Warren Buffett is rich? How much money do you think he would give to be 40 again?
Yeah.
All of it.
Probably all of it.
All
yeah.
of it.
Or almost all. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but I imagine he would. If I was him, I probably would.
There was an interview of Bob Marley. A guy was interviewing Bob Marley one time. He goes, you know, right when he was getting big, you know, he got commercialized and uh-huh. started making a lot of money. And
yeah.
The interviewer said, like, well Bob, are you rich? Are you rich now? And he goes, well, what do you mean rich? He was like, well, do you have a lot of wealth? Do you have a lot of money in the bank? And he goes, that isn't what makes me rich. You're rich and my rich don't mean the same thing.
Hmm.
And I thought, like, you know, that's very astute, you know.
Totally.
Thought. Yeah, what does make you rich?
Yeah. But I just like, and I don't know, I hope I'm not jumping too soon in your notes, but just that idea of thinking about leisure
mm-hmm.
and spending your time wisely.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what leisure is. Leisure is wise spending of your time. And time is all wrapped up in memory, legacy, heavenly reward. Okay? The things that you use your time with are the things you will have to live with for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I mean, this is the currency that you have.
Yeah.
And it's like using it well is exactly for all eternity.
Right.
You will receive a reward or not for the way you use your time. And so leisure is actually the why. This is it's like putting a credit in your account because it's wise spending of your time. It's truly the only thing you have
mm-hmm.
is this time to do something with, okay? And so leisure orients our soul towards eternal realities. You know, in the of course, the liturgy is the height of leisure. And so when we use our time in this way, it's sort of like ascending to the height of existence.
Yeah, Aquinas says that time is the arena in which human persons move towards eternity.
Yes. I love that.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, because you have that feeling of motion, which you don't lose in heaven. It, like, heaven has, even though you're outside of, like, here time still exists in heaven. It's a different kind of time. We talk about it being outside of time, but we really mean we're outside of earthly time.
Right.
But there is still heaven is this perpetual motion towards
love.
Towards that infinite love, right? Because God is infinite, you can be running towards Him constantly.
Yeah.
And getting closer, but there's always more.
Yeah. So each opportunity becomes each moment becomes an opportunity for growth and virtue. Don't let me forget, this isn't in my notes, but St. Teresa of Avila talks about growth in prayer and the use of time and how it works. Don't let me forget to talk about that.
Okay. We'll be right back. You clearly are using your time well, listening to the Catholic Man Show. This is a sign that you have a well-ordered,
that you're growing in such virtue.
You have your chronological virtues seem to be well-ordered.
Nice.
Can we refer to some virtues as chronological virtues? Why not? Hey, why not?
We have to make a splash somewhere.
This is, all right, trademark. This is what's going to... It's for, like, if I'm going to become a doctor.
How would you define chronological virtues?
If I'm going to be a doctor of the church, it's obviously Limburgatory is like
the first.
That's my main. But classifying the virtues as chronological, that'll be the other one. Like, wow, what a gift to the church.
Okay, so speaking of a doctor of a church, let's talk about St. Teresa.
Yeah.
Of Avila.
She's great.
So she's talking about the growth of your prayer life and how obviously growth in virtue, growth in your prayer life is not an instantaneous thing, right? It is a slow, habitual process of growth. Mm-hmm. And she relates it into like your prayer life into four steps, into four analogies, basically like of watering a plant. Okay. She says there's the first step, which is taking a pail of water from the well, getting the pail out of the well, full of water, going over to the plant, pouring the water onto the plant, and the manual process it takes to water this plant. She says, you know, this is a tough chore, right? To go fetch the water, you have to go over there. It seems like there's a lot more work involved. The next step is not irrigation. The next step is... I just went blank. Dang it.
Letting it soak in?
No, it was... There's another one, and then there's irrigation, like where you... Oh, the wheel, the water wheel. So the next one is like the water wheel, where you put a process in place, and it helps you bring the water
to
the plant.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one is an irrigation system, where you find water from a river, and you route it to...
To the plant.
And it's like, well, that one's even easier than the water wheel.
Totally.
And way easier than
carrying it.
And then she says the final one, the fourth one, is when rain happens and you don't have to do anything, but you just let the water soak up into the plant. Mm-hmm. She says this is a very kind of an analogy of your prayer life, right? At first, prayer is hard. It seems like you're just efforting constantly to just try to get the water to the plant. And the next one's like, yeah, I'm building this process, you know, the system in order to water the plant. And then the next one's like, well, this one's a lot easier. I'm just going to let the water that's currently running kind of funnel over here to the plant. And then the next one is actually just allowing the water allowing the rain to water the plant, which is ultimately contemplation. But I find that to be very helpful, at least, the way she says it, not the way I say it, because that was a little excruciating.
You know, at least that run at it, I think you could do better.
I could definitely do better. Yeah. I forgot one of them.
Next time.
This is why I didn't have it in my notes. It was just something that popped up in my head. But But that is a kind of a good maturation of the prayer life.
Sure. Yeah. How as you, and you literally do that, you know, the water wheel is sort of like building a system. And, you know, in the beginning, you very quickly start to develop a system of prayer. You pray in the same way, you know, you're like, oh, I say this prayer first or whatever, you know, I come to this place. And then it gets easier. It gets more fruitful from there. And then eventually God takes over, hopefully.
Right.
And that's really, really,
contemplation.
Contemplation is, that's the difference between meditation and contemplation. Is meditation is like you reflecting on God, and contemplation is something that God actually does to you. He like reaches and raises you up.
But it all takes time, right? There's a maturation process throughout this whole time to be able to actually water this plant, namely your prayer life.
Yeah, so you know, it's really, I think it can be very helpful and effective just to think about, all right, how many hours do you have to in a day to actually use? Okay, because you have to go to work. There's some, you know, it's not 24. You know, you're sleeping. There are just some things that are not, you don't have control over, right? You have to do certain things. So you might realize, like, I have like maybe 5 hours, 4 hours a day, maybe less, maybe more. And just what is it that you want to do with those hours? What do you want them to look like? And, you know, it's obviously should this be like general, broad principle things, because you can't, each day is going to be different. But generally speaking, what do you want when you look back at the end of your life? Mm-hmm. What kind of life do you want to have lived? Right? Because like I said earlier, every choice you make, everything you do with your time is something you'll have to live with for the rest of your life. You can never get it back, and it will be there with you in eternity. At your judgment, you know, the good Lord will say, you know, I gave you all of these moments. I held you in existence for this period of time, and a gift beyond calculation that you are for so long, right? You did nothing to initiate your own existence. He just, you know, he put you here. What did you do with it? He gave, you know, just total gift. He gave you the fact that you exist, you know, and gosh, like, doesn't that like cut you to the heart that, I just think about, like, I squander so much of this.
Yeah, dude, this is something that I've reflected on quite a bit, of how many times I've let a bad day affect my next day. And, you know, I fall into a sin, or I just don't do things the way I want, you know, I should have, or I just let an opportunity pass and I didn't do it yesterday. And like, I just get so frustrated with myself that I can't believe I did that, or how did I fall into this again, or and then I just let today completely, like, I just allow that thought process to ruin my day. It's like almost a give up day, you know, until I can get to confession, or until I can, you know, make, you know, say sorry to whoever it was I did wrong, or until I can do something. I'm just like almost throwing up your hands and say, this is just a burned day. You got to just get to the next one. And like, that is just like, this is what St. Francis de Sales and everybody, you know, so many saints have said, is like, a saint is the one who gets up and tries again and says, today I begin.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good reflection in the morning, is like, today I want to be a saint.
Have you read Brother Lawrence? I forget the name of his.
Yes.
The book. I can't remember the name, the title, but I really love when he talks about.
Is it Presence of the Lord or something like that?
Something like that. I mean, that's his main, that's his big thing about, right, like always having, being aware that you're in the presence of God, and just how much that changes. You know, that was his path to holiness.
Right.
You know, he found he didn't even hardly need devotions, but. He has this great, just very simple thing he talks about, sin. And when you sin, you repent, and then you just move on. You know, you've received mercy, you've been forgiven, and just how bad it is to dwell on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he basically says you just should cheerfully, like, recognize, well, you know, you are a sinner. Would you think you weren't? You know, you are. And the Lord is so merciful. He's forgiven you. Now just get over it and go about it, you know, and don't let it haunt your other, like, don't give it more time. Don't carry water for your past sins.
Right.
You know, what are you doing? Put the bucket down.
Right.
And, like, remember that you have a God who is merciful, and be in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Be present to that. And, quit looking backwards, you know. Don't be like Lot's wife, turning around and...
Nah, bro.
I got to see it.
She turns into salt. Yeah. N-A, nah.
Ah, gotcha. That was... I didn't realize that you were on so many levels there. It's pretty good, I guess.
If I'm going to become a doctor of the church...
It's because of my salt jokes.
Yeah. They're pretty salty.
They're spicy. They're pretty spicy, you know.
There's a story of friars playing pool, and one of them asks the friar who's shooting pool, he says, like, if the Lord was coming back right now, what would you do? And all the friars...
Or like in 10 minutes or something.
Yeah, and all the friars were answering the questions. Like, I'd run to confession. I'd run to adoration. I'd go say my prayers. And you know, they said all these different answers, all of them which are good things to do.
Yeah.
And they asked the friar who's sitting there playing pool, he said, like, what would you do? And he goes, I'd finish this game of pool. It's like, he's living in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
He said, like, no, I'm playing this game of pool.
I'm playing this game of pool because I feel like the Lord has asked me, you know, this is my calling. This is, the Lord called me to play pool right now. And if that's what he's called me to do, I need to, you know, by golly, I need to play pool.
You know? Which is just like, that's awesome. I would not say that, but
yeah,
that's talking about living in the moment.
Even knowing it and thinking that, oh, what a beautiful thing to do, I still think I'm running to the chapel.
Yeah, you know? Me too.
That, hope that pool thing works out for you. Like, I'm really rooting for you.
Yeah. Hope to see you in heaven.
Yeah. I'm going to the chapel.
Yeah. So we're out of time on Catholic Radio, but I do want to touch base on what Nick Saban says about time, which I found to be interesting. You know, the winningest college football coach of all time. I think he's actually Catholic as well. So we'll briefly touch on this in the podcast. Go check us out. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
So Nick Saban is... a man of discipline, obviously. He's a man...
Discipline,
thank you. He's a... The greatest at his... You know, what he is. Like, what he's done. Right? And they've asked him now, you know, now that he's been retired, you know, what was your process? Like, what was it? What was your secret sauce? How you were able to win as much as you did. And he said three things. I think this is, you can definitely take this into the Catholic life. Here's his three things. He says, you focus on the now, what's important right now. Number two is you control the controllables.
I think that's a big one.
Yeah. And then the last one is the process over the outcome, which I think is just so apropos for like,
That one is hard to buy into, I think. I think when you
oh, of course, that's the hardest one.
I mean, I think people would readily agree, and they would see the wisdom in it, but then in their own lives,
but in
hard
our
to convince your act really convince yourself.
But in our finite lives, we see all the time saints who've become saints because their outcome was like, how did this guy who was the holiest of holy men that I knew, like, and his outcome was death? His outcome was martyrdom. His outcome was starvation. His outcome was like, you know, in the world's eyes, just complete failure. It's like, no. The process over the outcome. The process is sainthood. And in this life, you won't see that outcome.
Right.
It's the next life. And so I think those three things incredibly applicable to the Catholic life.
Totally.
Right? You live in the now. What are you doing right now to become a saint?
Yeah, I mean, so many even of other business principles or rule books, you know, whatever those, you know what I'm talking about. They all have application to the spiritual life because at the end of the day, we're talking about virtue. We're talking about affecting human behavior and responding to our own nature. And what are the things that we need to do to order our nature towards an end, towards the goal, whatever that goal may be, right? So when you apply them to the spiritual life, it's like, hey, that works out great. And it turns out those business principles is like you read some of the like church fathers and it's like, they basically said the same thing like 1,500 years ago or something. And so, yeah, because we're talking about ordering our own nature and how do we, as people, we were the same back then as we are now. We have the same struggles. We have the same tendencies. That's why history repeats itself because human nature has never changed. When you present humanity, human natures with a similar set of circumstances, they behave similar ways, right? So when those similar circumstances come around again, guess what? People are going to behave the same way they did the first time, all right? So when you go and you read Exodus and you're like judging those people in the desert, like cut them a break, all right?
Because
if you were there, I think you might have seen it a little differently, you know, if you were in their shoes.
Are you sitting there judging David?
Yeah, I think it takes a lot to judge him. I mean, he messed up, no doubt.
Yeah.
But if you're the king, I mean, he had power to do anything.
That's what I'm saying.
Wanted,
like you're sitting there judging him. Like, it's like
how quick, you know. It's easy to look at them like someone who has no power, be like, gosh, that guy, he's really messing up. But then, like as soon as you get it, you know. The weird things that you would do.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, I just think that those three principles are great. You know, live in the now. What can you do right now? When you're living in the now, you control what you can control. Control the controllables.
Yeah.
You can't control what other people think about you. You can't control what other people say about you. You can't control external things that are happening around you. All you can control is that you are a son of God and that you should live a joyful Catholic life, and that your life could be the only Bible that somebody reads that day.
Yeah. I was watching an interview of Charlie Kirk a while back.
May God rest his soul.
Yeah, indeed. And someone asked him a question. He's like, oh man, that's a great question. But and he said, like, I would love to know, but I don't think about that at all. I would like to. And he said, there are 12 things that I think about. I only allow myself to think about 12 things. Mm. And he said what they were. And I won't be able, I can't remember them all. Mm-hmm. But it was like, so, but the first like six were his wife, his children, you know, his religion. I might be getting these in a slightly, you know, so like God, his wife, his children, like his household. And it was like half of them were things inside his house. And like he only lets himself think about 12 things. And then the other half were business related about his business, his mission, his, you know, his goals, you know, how is he? It was like, man, no wonder why this guy is so effective. Mm-hmm. Right? At both being an ambassador for Christ and at achieving success in his career and things like that. Because he was so, he took his time and, you know, he realized this is finite. And kind of what you were saying about focus on the,
control the controllables,
right? So like there are two spheres. You have your sphere of awareness and your sphere of influence. Okay. So there's a lot of things we're aware of, you know, the whole world, you know, what's going on in Iran, everything on social media, politics. You know, like very likely the average, you know, if you're listening to this, probably there are politicians from other states that you like have, you spend time thinking about. And that's a waste of your time. I mean, I'd do that. It's a waste of my time. But so you have this large sphere of awareness. Mm-hmm. Your sphere of influence is very tiny. the number of people or the number of things that you can actually change, like that you can actually have an effect on, is a very small circle. Mm-hmm. It's basically your immediate friends and your family, some people at your parish and your, you know, probably your office. But, you know, the number of people is pretty small. Mm-hmm. And yet we spend almost all of our time and mental energy thinking about our sphere of awareness. When we should, that is just almost always a waste of time. Mm-hmm. We ought to be thinking about our sphere of influence exclusively, right? And so that's like, when I heard Charlie talk about that, it's like, yes, that's what he's doing. He's forcing himself in the mental discipline it must take. Because he actually said, I don't allow myself to even think about those things.
Hmm.
Because the question he was asked had something to do with like President Trump's assassination attempt, you know, and like, oh, do you think it was, I forget exact question, doesn't matter. But, you know, it was like something that may have been down Charlie Kirk's alley.
Mm-hmm.
So just for him to say, no, I don't even let myself think about that. I only think about these things. I was very impressed. And like that's stuff like that, I think, is really going to help you. You have to put up those guardrails so that you use your time well. Because it's like saying, oh, I'm gonna use my time well. That's like, you know, having a New Year's resolution of like, I'm going to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, losing weight is not something you can do. You can't do that. You can eat less. You can exercise more, you know, but losing weight is not an action. It's not something you can act upon, right? You have to do other things. And so saying I'm going to use my time well is very similar. It's like, well, that's not a deliverable, right? You have to say, I'm going to do these things and I'm not going to do those things. You have to be more specific. But it's just, if that's something that we can get good at doing, your effectiveness as a person, both professionally and spiritually, I think will be parabolically increased.
And even if it doesn't in this life or you can't see it, that doesn't mean it's not working.
Absolutely.
Which is like the process over the outcome.
Right.
It's like, I'm not feeling the Lord in prayer today. It's like, nope, that's not why we're doing it. You're not praying to feel the Lord.
Right.
You're praying. Yeah. You're praying out of love and desire to know Him, so you can love Him more, so you can serve Him more.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I found that to be helpful when it comes to like, what can I do today? Like, I want to do the Lord's will, but I don't know what. You hear this all the time. It's like, I don't know what the Lord wants. It's like, well, here's what He wants. He wants you to be with Him forever in heaven. So He's giving you this time. So focus on right now. Control what you can control and let the process be greater than the outcome.
Can we end with a philosophical question?
Yeah.
I want to ask you this.
Okay.
Does the past exist?
When you say exist, what do you mean?
That's the question. Does the past exist? And I'm asking this question, and I have no idea what the answer is.
There's a lot of like philosophers who've talked about this, who've actually come to try to come to the conclusion basically that the past or the future doesn't exist at all. And then there's a
term
for it.
I could very easily see that the future does not exist.
There's a term for it. It's something relative, like something relativist. Time relative.
I mean, existence only is just the present,
right? I forget what it's called. But yeah, there's a whole philosophy on this. I mean, like,
I do not want to end up, because I'm not a philosopher, and I don't want to end up like espousing myself on the wrong team. Because even though I'm not a philosopher, I still believe in teams, okay? And want to be on the right team for things. But it's an interesting question.
The past has existed.
Oh, certainly.
Without a doubt.
But does it now? I don't know.
In your soul, yes. This is what I was saying at the beginning. Like the soul has the past and the future are soul oriented. The body is only is now. So your soul is past, present, and future.
You know what?
The body is now.
I do think that they exist. They do exist. Because they all still exist. God is present at all time, all the time. Mm-hmm. So I think as a Catholic, once again, not a philosopher, don't trust me. But I do think, actually, now that I'm thinking about it more, you would have to say that the past and the future exist because they are they exist in the mind of God, right? They exist, those moments exist equally as much as this one does. Because God is present in every moment, all the time. You know, he's constantly beholding the whole timeline of all of creation.
And what about the Mass? The representation.
Well, right, yeah. So in the Mass, we are become represented, which is, I think you have to say it represented, because if you say represented, that makes it feel like less real, like it's just like a symbol.
Yeah.
We're made represent at the Mass, or at the crucifixion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I'm sort of changing my answer, because at first I was like, oh yeah, I think maybe they don't exist, only the present. And now I'm going like, no, dude. They all exist.
And that's
I'm right. Gosh, I hope I'm right.
And that's what it's like.
If I'm not made a doctor of the church, it's because I'm wrong about that. And that's probably the only reason.
4 minutes of this conversation is what it's like to be best friends with David Niles.
Yeah. I mean, sort of.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.